Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. A bombshell in the criminal justice system after 9 people at the Waupun prison are arrested following a string of inmate deaths. We have you covered on how lawmakers are responding. Plus, the state withholds nearly $17 million from Milwaukee public schools after their budgets were mismanaged. And 3 allies of Donald Trump are charged in Wisconsin for their role in the alleged scheme to keep the former president in power. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for June 7th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
First, we're going to start with some more problems in Wisconsin prisons, but specifically at the Waupun Correctional Institute after 4 inmates have died over the past year. And we just learned of new charges from the Dodge County Sheriff Department about 9 individuals, and one of them is the warden. This comes after their investigation found that these employees failed to adequately care for inmates in their custody. And this whole debacle that happened earlier this week is also renewing calls from lawmakers to shut down this prison and also reigniting the debate over Green Bay's prison. So Republican lawmakers were asked about this ahead of Joint Finance Committee on Thursday. Let's first just take a listen to what they had to say about possible solutions going forward.
I think the sheriff conducted the criminal investigation into the deaths. The FBI has an ongoing investigation. The Department of Corrections indicated yesterday that they're continuing investigations. So I think investigations are continuing. And I think long-term, was talked about a little bit yesterday by Representative Schron and myself, we'll look at legislation for better oversight in the future, but that's more of a long-term discussion. I think those investigations are ongoing right now.
This starts at the top, and I guess I'm not totally surprised that Secretary Carr resigned. I think I know in the Senate we had some serious concerns about his leadership at the Department of Corrections, and it starts at the top, and I think we need effective leadership, not just in that agency, but from the governor's office as well.
So there's a lot of troubling details, I guess you could say, in this investigation from the Dodge County Sheriff that he detailed in a press conference. He specifically was talking about these individuals were charged for 2 deaths, even though we know there have been 4 over the past year. And one inmate was unfortunately dead in their cell for over 12 hours, and staff missed a series of checks on this individual before finding them. Another inmate died of dehydration and malnutrition, according to the investigation. So again, of course, it's easier said than done to shut down a prison after incidents like this, but they've really been the center of controversy for a very long time. And if you do shut down a prison and close it, you got to build a new one. And we know that comes with a hefty price tag.
A couple of things to note. One, the Waupun mayor has been pushing back against the calls to close the prison. So remember, Waupun and Green Bay both date to the late 1800s. The mayor, Ron Bishop, in Waupun has said, look, we don't want our prison closed in Waupun. That community is built around the prison. If that prison goes away, it's a huge hole in that city's economy. So there will be discussion going forward about building a new one, but you can't forget that piece. And two, Governor Evers has said repeatedly he wants a holistic approach to prison system. Lincoln Hills, the troubled youth facility up in northern Wisconsin, there's a replacement coming online in a couple of years in Milwaukee. There's also a proposal to build another Type 1 facility called for youth, the most serious offenders in Dane County. If you build those, you free up Lincoln Hills. Well, Lincoln Hills is going to be converted to an adult facility to add more space. Evers is talking about how do we look at this, but that also still would leave these 2 older prisons in place. Sheriff said there's a problem there. He wants those to go away. That discussion will continue. A couple of the layers is onion, as we talk about in politics. The sheriff said that former Corrections Secretary Carr, who resigned in early March, he spoke with him about a week and a half before he resigned or announced his retirement and laid out what's going on in this investigation and said there's a problem here. He said Carr did not take responsibility, but shifted the blame toward HEP, this warden who's been charged in this entire thing. That's noteworthy because during the availability this week in Joint Finance Committee with Howard Markline, co-chair of the state senator, he hinted that Carr faced trouble with his caucus, Republican caucus, if he had been reappointed. So Carr was confirmed unanimously by the Senate during Evers' first term. whenever a governor's reelected, they have to reappoint everybody. Carr was reappointed in early 2023. He hadn't been confirmed yet. There have been problems with prison, and Mark Lyon said there were problems in his caucus with Carr. So we don't know if that played into Carr's decision, but it brought out to light these rumblings you've heard for a while that there were some, maybe some troubling signs for Carr with his future if he'd gone through that confirmation process before he retired.
Right, and I also talked to Representative Michael Shaw, who is the chairman of the Assembly Committee on Corrections. And the next steps he would like to take is, he said he's going to be calling Speaker Voss sometime in the next few days, asking him for subpoena power, which the legislature has, to use in his committee and ask people, a lot of individuals that were involved at Waupun, and call them to testify. I think it could be a little messy if we actually see that sometime this summer to have those public hearings, because of course there's ongoing investigations going at Waupun, but this is kind of the next step that he wants to take, because when you look at what lawmakers can do, any possible solution to our prison system is going to take years. I mean, we've seen it with Lincoln Hills, right? I mean, it was a promise that Governor Evers like ran on. It took a very long time, and they're still open. Yes, have they taken steps? Yes, have they secured funding? It's just a multi-pronged approach when it comes to shutting down a prison or building others. So we'll see what happens there. But Straw said this needs to be, top priority of the list. He even talked about, he's like, I know there's a lot of people facing re-election. It's going to be a busy summer. People are on the campaign trail. But this is something he wants immediate action on. So we could see some committee hearings in the coming weeks, possibly on this issue.
Absolutely. Yes.
All right. Let's move on to more fallout at Milwaukee Public Schools. We have quite a lot to discuss, but we're going to first start with the new news this morning that Governor Tony Evers called for multiple audits looking at the district and their finances after they're now over 8 months overdue on some of their financial reports, which of course put them at risk of losing funding. And it was just yesterday that the Department of Public Instruction finally did withdraw nearly $17 million in special education funding. We know that MPS says they are continuously trying to work to get a solution on this. They also had multiple errors in their reporting. So this is turning into, of course, a much larger deal now that not only MPS has just lost some funding, maybe we could possibly see other school districts at risk. This announcement from Evers comes also days after Keith Posley, who is now the former superintendent of MPS, he stepped down on Tuesday after all of this whole debacle unfolded.
So look, MPS is going to get its money. It just has to meet the requirements and fulfill all these reporting things they have to do. So the special education funding, almost $17 million due this week. Once they complete these reports, they'll get the money. The roughly $200 million in general aid funding that's supposed to be due in June, it might be late. They'll eventually get the money if they just file the reports. The question is still what happens afterwards. So Evers wants this additional audit. So MPS is already doing its own financial audit. This is more about operations and the effectiveness in the classroom. So that's kind of interesting. The governor, don't forget, was former DPI superintendent, was at the agency for many, many years. He's taking this step now. Republicans are not very enthusiastic about the idea. Robin Voss, Assembly Speaker, posted on X today that he was dismissive of the idea. Like, look, who's going to perform the audit? Department of Public Instruction. Who's overseeing this entire debacle in his kind of mind? DPI and the bureaucracy, quote unquote, of government. Republicans are chomping the bit for something different. They want to see big changes at MPS. What's that mean? They've been pushing toward more school choice, more voucher program stuff for years in MPS. They've been talking about breaking up MPS. What's the legislative approach to this district that they'll find satisfactory, and can you get the governor to buy in? The governor, with this whole audit, is saying, this is what I want to do. He's found the money to do it, everything else. He wants buy-in from locals in the district. I've seen the mayor and county executives say, yeah, we're on board. I've not yet seen the school board say, we are embracing this call. Mm-hmm. But if everybody's on board, they'll do it. But then what? What's going to be the change? What will be the legislative fix to all this?
And also, how do you comply and audit when their finances are still not in order? It's almost putting another task on DPI, who says they still are meeting with MPS daily to try and get this in order. We also know that the Milwaukee School Board today is going to be addressing the press again sometime this afternoon, so possibly can learn more about their thoughts on this. There's also going to be a special meeting next week to find some possible candidates to fill Posley's position. There's still even more people people, especially lawmakers and some school board members, that want other people held accountable. I mean, this is not just fall on all the shoulders of Posley. Yes, he's the chief executive of MPS, but a lot of lawmakers I talked to this week say, you know, he shouldn't be the only one that has to fall on the sword. We know the district comptroller on the school board stepped down. We don't really know. There was no clarity if they resigned, but we got confirmation from a spokesperson from MPS that the position became vacant. And there's just more calls too and questions about, you know, when did the school board know? When did DPI know about these issues before voters approved that $252 million referendum? There was an alderman this week that also said the school board should possibly look at reevaluating that, maybe diminishing the $252 million, but it's already been approved. Yeah. So there's still a lot more to happen with this in MPS. That kind of moves on to our next topic, because there's been more calls to reform MPS. And this week, former Governor Tommy Thompson, who was at a Milwaukee Press Club event that I was at and is co-hosted by Wiz Politics, he floated the idea that, you know, now is the time for MPS to be dissolved. Of course, this is something that Thompson talked about first, I want to say, about 25 years ago when he was in office. And he's kind of, you know, the one who spawned really key education policies like the state school choice program. So this is kind of, in a sense, he knows quite a little bit about. But all those efforts before to break up MPS have never gone anywhere. We saw the last bill introduced in 2022. Meanwhile, you have other Democrats like Representative Lakeisha Myers, who I spoke to a few times this week, that says she wants a federal investigation into how MPS handled past funding in light of all of these revelations. So let's first hear from Thompson and Myers on this issue and what they had to say about it.
We're failing the students that go to Milwaukee Public Schools. We've been failing those students for 30 to 40 years. And now is the time to change. We do have an emergency, so let's do something about it. I'm advocating having a blue ribbon committee. I would also advocate very strongly of splitting up MPS into four equal school districts.
We already know that the Department of Public Instruction has said that Milwaukee Public Schools has to pay back money that they were overpaid from the last 2 years because FY22 and 23 were incorrect. So we don't know what the dollar amount is of those 2 years that need to be repaid to the state. And then you have the fact that we have not yet passed a budget for FY25. So, or 24, so we need for 24-25. So we need to figure out where we are. So I would like to see that all the Baker-Tilly reports for the last 5 years be made public to the general public. I would like to see that there be a full investigation of the finances for the district. And I would like to see those individuals that were part of this mess gone.
The governor was also asked today about whether he wants a complete takeover of MPS. He said he's not really fully on board with that, but he would like to see the county executive and the mayor to have more of a role over that. Now, the mayor at his press conference today, too, said he doesn't really want to do that. So there's all these ideas out there. What's going to stick? I think it's still too soon to decide. It's more that I'm hearing about is, let's get this in order, let's get our books correct, and then go from there.
The common denominator of all the efforts at the state level to take over MPS, to reform MPS, has been a lack of buy-in from local officials. You also can't ignore that a lot of the conversation at times has been driven by white Republican lawmakers in the suburbs in a majority-minority district in the city. There is a friction there that does not play well with some folks. So I don't know what the answer is going to be or how they get a buy-in, because the governor is a former superintendent, not just of the state, but he's also a local educator. Like, he's not big on the idea of more school choice. Republicans have pointed out that this is a governor who's tried to kind of limit school choice. In their words, force Milwaukee kids back into, in their words, a broken school system. So how do you get those two sides to agree on something legislatively that was going to work?
I also just want to touch on some other tidbits from Tommy Thompson at this luncheon, too. Given that he is going to be a delegate at the Republican National Convention, there was a lot of election questions that we asked him about. He believes, you know, he's going to support former President Donald Trump, but he believes his conviction can, in a sense, really rally Republican voters, which we also heard from RNC Chairman Michael Whatley this week. And he believes it could also possibly having the convention in Milwaukee help convince some Democrats, he believes, to to kind of sway their way if they're undecided about that. I also asked him about the fake elector news, which we're about to get in just a little bit, after Attorney General Josh Call charged three allies of the former president. He said, you know, he doesn't believe any of them should be charged. He didn't think any of them did wrong. I asked him, well, you know, if you were in the room, would you sign that paperwork? And he said, no, he believes in elections. So what I saw from the takeaway from that is that he's kind of in that lane that, you know, I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to go into conspiracy theories, but I'm going to support this the former president and hope he wins come November. All right, let's get to that next topic that I just hinted at, with Attorney General Josh Call finally, I would say, confirming that this investigation is going on into the whole fake elector scheme, because there were some reports from CNN that this was already happening, but Call was unable to talk about it. So he made that announcement earlier this week, which is all about this alleged plot to try and keep the former president in power after the 2020 election, after he narrowly lost. Let's just hear a little bit from Attorney General Call's press conference, where he was a little tight-lipped about the investigation, but that didn't stop us from trying to ask some questions about it.
This morning, we filed a criminal complaint in Dane County Circuit Court, charging three defendants in connection with an alleged conspiracy to have electors who were not duly appointed presidential electors meet and cast votes in Wisconsin in December 2020. And transmit a so-called certificate of the votes of the 2020 electors from Wisconsin that in part referred to these electors as the duly elected and qualified electors for president and vice president of the United States of America from the state of Wisconsin, and reflected the votes of these unappointed electors for president and vice president. With any case, the decisions we make about timing are based on a variety of factors. That includes where we are in terms of developing the facts, our view on the law. But our judgment was that now is an appropriate time to file these charges. But again, the investigation is ongoing.
So who were the charges filed against? We're talking about Kenneth Chesbro, who was kind of the mastermind of this entire scheme, at least he's alleged to. I mean, there's other charges in Georgia, Nevada, a lot of other states that are looking into this. A former Trump attorney, Jim Troupas, and Mike Roman, who all these individuals formerly worked for Trump, and each face a single felony charge of forgery.
So one question I asked Josh Call at the news conference was, at what point did this cross from legal advice to conspiracy? Because remember, Republicans argued and have argued that this whole thing was to preserve Donald Trump's options as he challenged election results in Wisconsin. So the electors signed these documents in mid-December. That was right after the state Supreme Court, like within a couple of hours, state Supreme Court shooting down a Trump lawsuit challenging the results. But he had appeals that were alive before the U.S. Supreme Court. The Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago rejected his case on Christmas Eve. So there were things going on, and they've argued long that this was just to keep those options open. Maybe so for the 10 electors, but critics will point out that Chesbro, Troupas, Roman were not just passive people here. They were actively engaged in how do we overturn election results. If you read the indictment, there are messages in which it seemed to acknowledge that Biden had won Wisconsin, yet they're trying to submit this false scheme of electors, slave electors, to Vice President Pence. Now, Ron Johnson called this outrageous, that, you know, this is just legal advice. Now, Johnson also has some self-preservation here. Let's not forget, he is a figure who has tried to downplay repeatedly how much he was involved, but we've seen multiple messages that suggest that his office was part of the effort to deliver these slates to Pence. But anyway, ask Call, what was the line? And he wouldn't say. Just that we followed the investigation, we followed the evidence, and went where it led us. Okay, well, how are you going to nail this down in a conviction? That's the question.
Right.
And two, we saw prosecutors in Georgia, Michigan, Arizona months and months ago file charges there. What's taken so long? Josh Call is in this kind of weird island where Republicans are being super partisan and Democrats are being super cautious that he is taking too long for something that was obvious to them months ago. Upshot is here in early, mid-June. This has been filed. Initial appearance in September. What's 2 months later? An election. So no matter what Call does, Republicans see this as being tainted by elections, part of the election interference effort against Donald Trump this fall.
Right. I think it's also a fair question, too, of why he went after these three individuals and not, you know, any other of the 10 Republican electors that were in the room and did sign that paperwork falsely. I know that, you know, Andrew Hitt, the former chairman of the state party, he and a few others already reached a settlement, kind of admitting their role involved in this, you know, in another separate lawsuit. But that's also still what I'm still hearing about, is why these three and not any others. But of course, every case has a reason for that. And And it's ongoing, so he might be looking into others. We're just not too sure. All right, let's get to the next topic, which we're talking about a UW regent who finally did step down after he indeed said he was going to originally stay. So GOP appointee Bob Atwell is who we're talking about, and he shared an email with UJR about his decision to step down. Now, Atwell, of course, notified UW officials that he planned to remain on the board for the foreseeable future after Assembly Speaker Robin Voss advised him that he can serve until his successor is appointed and confirmed.
So the tone from Atwell's statement and his email to UW folks was this got out of hand, essentially. So there's this, the background is the lawmakers have these joint legislative council study committees every session. They're convened to help propose, I don't know, ideas for legislation the next session. Robin Voss, obviously been a big critic of UW, he put together this, and Republican leaders in the Senate, the study committee on UW, the future of UW. Atwell is very interested in how that's going to go. His suggestion is kind of like, I only want to focus on that. I wasn't talking about staying for years. I just want to get through like this report and see what happened. I've got an interest in here. That said, he also put in the email, I can see how it left the impression there's going to be a DNR thing. That is a reference to Fred Prain, the Walsall dentist, who starts in the DNR board after his term expired, preventing Evers appointees, we're going to have a majority of that board, and keeping Walker appointees in charge. This is much different. The Board of Regents is well, overwhelmingly Evers appointees. There were three Walker appointees left. Now they're down to one. I mean, it wasn't the same situation. That said, he says, I left room for this interpretation. It got out of hand. Now I'm leaving. He's stepping down, and the replacement is taking off. He also praised the guy replacing him, Mr. Nixon, to take office. And some news out of the Board of Regents this morning. Evers is calling on UW to propose a budget that will request $400 million in each year of the biennium to try and get the university, in his words, back up to par in funding. So that's something to watch going forward. We'll get budget instructions from the administration sometime this summer. We should see budget proposals from the agency by September-ish. And then away we go, another budget early next year.
All right, there we go. All right, now we're going to touch on some key races after the filing deadline we reached earlier this week about candidates, of course, if you're going to run. And there's some interesting matchups that we want to talk about and some other key takeaways. Of course, the main headline is that 11 members of the state legislature will not face a major party opposition on their way into a new term, while more than two dozen incumbents are facing primary challengers. We also know Democrats have filed the most individuals to run in this upcoming election cycle than ever before. They've been, of course, touting that quite a bit. Oh, maybe a big reason why is because their new maps are in place. But first, JR, let's start with the matchup between Representative Joel Kitchens. He's a Republican from Sturgeon Bay who is going to be facing Milt Sagwell of Kenobi.
So these primary challenges, I've never seen so many incumbents challenged, but get a primary challenge in a cycle. So 22 Republicans, three Democrats, if I remember correctly. It's just kind of odd. I kind of figure out, like, what's the common theme? Is there one? But there isn't really a common theme I can find so far. Like this one, this guy ran against Joel Kitchens 2 years ago in the primary, got 22% roughly. So he just seems to have, you know, he doesn't have, has an issue with Joel. Okay, so there's that one. What's
right.
Our next one?
Let's move on to Representative Peter Schmidt, and who is facing Elijah Behnke.
All right, so here's, like, the craziness of the cycle caused by the map. So Elijah Behnke was drawn into a district with David Steffen in Green Bay. They're both Republicans. We've talked before about how Elijah decided to move over to a different district to challenge a different incumbent. It's kind of odd. Also, by the way, Elijah's father, Darwin, is running against Steffen. This is interesting. Yeah, I know.
Wow.
This is interesting because Robin Voss and Elijah Behnke have not been the best of friends.
Very true.
And groups looking at how to play in these races are going to go, okay, if I support the person opposing Elijah Behnke, i.e. Peter Schmidt, that might help me with Robin Voss. So I don't know how Elijah is going to get resources to challenge Schmidt other than the local GOP up there cannot stand Peter Schmidt. Like if you go look at their Facebook page or their press release, they do not like that man whatsoever. They are all gung-ho to help Elijah. So it'd be interesting to watch how the resources up there, the volunteers, work against the Madison money in that primary.
All right, now looking at a Milwaukee seat with Representative Ryan Clancy, who's being challenged by Jared Anderson, who was actually just endorsed by Mayor Cavalier Johnson this week.
This one has the overtones or undertones of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict in the Democratic Party and what's going on right now. Ryan Clancy has been very pro-Palestine in this entire thing. That angered some Democrats in Milwaukee, especially in the Jewish community. They went looking for a primary opponent to challenge him. This is going to be fascinating to watch how this plays out, because that will be a driving issue. And that an example of a single issue primary. Now they'll talk about other stuff.
Sure.
But this is driving that challenge for sure.
And it's a big issue in this election. All right, Representative Karen Hurd, who's being challenged by Lori Voss, and this is kind of a prime example where she was deciding if she's going to move into a new district, and there she did.
Again, so Karen Hurd drawn into a seat with Jody Emerson, Democrat in Eau Claire, pretty Democratic seat, said, I'm going to go move to this district. I've got ties over there. I can go move over here. Well, the mayor of Abbotsford said, not so fast. I'm going to run as well. So now you have a primary there. So it's an interesting one. The map's driving an interesting dynamic of somebody going, wait a second, you're moving into my territory. I might want this seat.
And last one we're going to touch on is Representative Chaz Green versus Scott Hambridge of Radisson.
So Green, freshman lawmaker, been no moderate by any stretch of the imagination. But you have somebody who touts his Facebook page being endorsed by Mike Lindell and Mike Flynn. So you're seeing this kind of Trumpy wing of the party kind of going after incumbents for whatever reason. I don't know how Chaz is not sufficiently pro-Trump. I have never heard him talk against Trump, but there is still this kind of election integrity undercurrent for some Republicans and driving some stuff. What I'm watching is, do any of these folks get like legs? Do they raise money? Do they have infrastructure behind them? What's RAC, Republican Assembly Campaign Committee, going to do? And the Assembly Democratic Campaign Committee, will they help their incumbents in primaries? How much will they help? All kinds of questions like that to watch, and we'll see. Finance reports in mid-July won't give you a great picture of who's doing what because they're so fresh, but we get kind of pre-primary, you'll know if they're for real and if they're up on the air with ads or on Facebook, are they getting endorsed by people? That's what I'm watching for.
Of course, we also have to mention the other Republicans, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, we know is being challenged. We talked about that last week. A co-chair of the Joint Finance, Mark Bourne, is also being challenged. So there's still others too, but these were also interesting dynamics we wanted to touch on.
I mentioned Bourne. There are challenges have been filed to nomination papers, so I'm in the weeds, I'll admit it, but let's talk. But so this year, June 1st is the deadline to file nomination papers. That's a Saturday. They were due June 3rd. Well, the guy running against Mark Bourne, or filed against Mark Bourne, gathered signatures on June 2nd. The challenge says you can't do that. That's after the deadline, so they should be thrown out. So we'll hear from the Elections Commission on Monday of next week about that. Also, that segues into Robin Voss, who has a deadline today to file a challenge to the recall petitions against him. A group that backs Robin, the Wisconsin Science for Liberty Fund, gets on analysis of those recall petitions. So 9,000 were turned in. They say, this is them, 2,000 from out of the district. They say several hundred were gathered after the deadline. Again, same thing.
Yeah.
The 60 days expired on a Saturday of Memorial Day weekend. They were due then that Tuesday. They're saying that some were gathered after the 60-day window. Is that allowed? I don't know. The Elections Commission will decide. And other issues like people who, your felons circulating nomination papers. So we'll see Robin's arguments, we think, at some point today, which will then play into a response in the Elections Commission end of June certifying or denying the recall petition.
All right, we're going to end this week's show previewing the Democratic State Convention, which will be kicking off tomorrow evening at the Pottawatomie Hotel and Casino in Milwaukee. It will be a two-day event. Of course, we'll be plenty of reporters there covering, including you, JR. We also just want to hear a little bit from Chairman Ben Wickler, who was interviewed earlier this week and talking about exactly kind of the topic that we were just mentioning is about Democrats filing the most candidates this cycle to try and run under the new map. So let's just hear a little bit from Ben on that issue.
I think we could flip 4 Senate seats in this election. That would take Democrats from 11 seats to 15 seats in 1 year, breaking the Republican supermajority, putting them on track to win a majority in 2026. In the state assembly, it's much more than that. We are currently 35 out of the 99 seats. If Democrats win 15 seats, they get a 50-seat majority in the state assembly, and we're fighting for at least that number. So I'm very, very excited about
what's
happening.
Chairman Schimming was here a few weeks ago. He says this will be the first election where Democrats can't blame the maps for their losses. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll take that. And Republicans can't pretend that it's something other than the maps that has kept them in power. They've lost the majority of votes for the state assembly in 2012 and in 2018 and walked away with massive victories both times. This time, if Democrats win the vast majority of the votes, they'll get the majority, and that's how a democracy is supposed to work.
So we only got a little bit of time. Their speaker is going to be the DNC chairman. Jamie Harrison is going to be addressing it. JR, what are some other things you're looking for this weekend?
JB Pritzker also going to be there speaking on Saturday. But I want to talk about the same thing with that primary in Milwaukee, Israel-Palestine. One, there are resolutions that are debated every convention I go to. There are two proposed that would call for immediate ceasefire in that conflict. They don't mention anything about October 7th and the Hamas attack on Israel. The state parties, platforms, and resolutions committee recommend against approving those resolutions. There'll be debate about that. Also, some pro-Palestinian folks are going to try and have protests during the convention. They want to buy tickets as a guest to get in. The party says, we sold out of tickets. 1,200 people bought tickets for this thing. Pretty well attended for a state party convention in June. So I'm watching that conflict. How's that conflict play out? And do you see more footage like at the Board of Regents meeting this week where seven protesters were arrested and taken out? Are we going to see that? Because Democrats don't want that to be the message. They want it to be about unity, and there's definitely a fissure in that party about that issue.
All right. And, of course, the event will be streamed on Wisconsin Eye. All right. That will do it for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.